You're listening to All the Best. I'm Maddie McQueen, and I'm so sick of my phone calling me out just for looking at it. Let me take you back to the first week of lockdown. I'm settling into my routine of going on one walk a day, working from home, and watching TikToks, and my phone sends me a notification. The notification reads, "Your screen time is up 70% this week for a total of 6 hours, 57 minutes a day." Next came the inevitable, guilt. I couldn't believe I had looked at my phone for almost a third of the day for an entire week. That's a lot of TikToks. But then I thought, no, stop making me feel guilty for looking at my phone when there's nothing else to look at. Of course, I'm spending more time in digital spaces. All of the physical spaces I know and love are closed. This week, we're playing three stories from radio and podcasting students at the University of Sydney. Like all students, they've been spending a lot more time online lately, which led Veronica to wonder, does her phone know that we're in a pandemic?
Hey Siri, what do you know about me? Our phones track a lot of information. To a certain extent, we're already aware of this. But how much do our phones know about us and what we are experiencing? How much do they know about the outside world? How much do they know about how we're spending our time? For many of us, the key manifestation of the pandemic in our day-to-day lives has been in how we spend our time. Events from the mundane to the exciting became postponed, cancelled, or virtual. We've learnt to work and study from home where our commutes are from one room to another, or for some, from bed to desk. Without our traditional markers of routine, we can end up with expanses of unmarked time, and it becomes harder to recognise this time passing. Time is already a pretty complicated concept to grapple with. Somewhat paradoxically, it's both linear and cyclical. The month of May will come again, but yesterday never will. We don't need to look very far to find clocks that try and simplify this, to assert a constant time progression on our lives. Our calendars, phones, and devices chart our progression from one day to the next. So what happens to this extra time in our schedules? There's a concept known as nature abhors a vacuum. It's often used to explain why things act differently in vacuums and how the surrounding forces try to fill these empty spaces. I asked mechanical engineer and author Christine McKinley whether she thought this had an impact on our lives and how we spend our time.
We say that nature abhors a vacuum because that's what it seems like to us. But in fact, nature has no particular feeling about a vacuum. And what a vacuum is just a lack of molecules. It's a place where we've removed all the air molecules. And what we have to know about the air molecules just in a normal room, even if you don't feel any motion, air is really just a bunch of different molecules zipping around and bumping into each other. And they're always in motion, even though we don't see that or feel that normally. So if you have a space where all the molecules have been removed, and just outside of that space, there's a bunch of molecules bumping into each other, they're going to try and get into that space where there's basically more room to dance. Picture a really crowded dance floor. And if there's suddenly room in the middle or room on the side, the dancers are going to naturally sort of gravitate over into that space where there's more room to dance. So that's what molecules do. And so to us, it looks like an aggressive invasion of nature into that space where there are no molecules, but really it's just a bunch of air kind of moving and dancing and running around and finding the most natural spot to be. So if there's a vacuum and all the molecules around it are trying to crash into it and sort of take over that, you know, that dance floor space, that's a really useful analogy to our lives. So say we're really busy and you could barely squeeze one more thing in our life. So our life is definitely not a vacuum. And then something comes up like you lose your job or your relationship breaks up, or say there's a global pandemic and you can't do all the activities you used to do. If we think about, nature's going to just crash in here and fill the vacuum, you know, that space and time will be filled with some activity. If we stand back for just a second, take a deep breath, and think about how we intentionally want to fill that space. Are we going to learn a language? Are we going to get better at our job? Am I going to double down on homeschooling and think of creative ways to get all of that done? Am I going to get in shape? You'll get a better result, guaranteed. It's like someone who's been married a long time and her marriage breaks up. She doesn't just go out and start dating the neighbors. You know, you don't just accept what is nearest to you and what is easiest and what just happens to be crashing into your life. No, no, no. You get very specific. You get very choosy about who you allow in your life to fill that space.
So how have I been filling my time? And what does my phone know about these choices? Our phones are accidental diaries. Between my camera roll, notes app, and what my screen time shows me, so much of my day-to-day life is recorded. If I look in my camera roll, there's quite a lot of photos of baking, recipes, and craft projects. This isn't exactly unusual, but at least now there are more pictures of actual baked goods rather than just the recipes. There are way more photos of my computer than there would be usually. Whilst I could just screenshot these moments, taking a photo on my phone feels like it actually memorializes a moment. Like I'm witnessing something actually happen, rather than some obscure virtual situation that I happen to see. My notes record fragments of quotes from TV shows that I enjoyed or random reminders for things that I've now long forgotten. I hope the me from the 20th of February knew what she was trying to remind the me from the 8th to 10th of May about, because I have no idea. And in future, writing down a little bit more than 8 to 10 May might help. What does your phone show about how you've been spending your time? Is there a marked point in your camera roll where your photos stopped being outside and started being inside? Is there a date in your calendar where you stopped going on outings, or do the events remain markers of a universe where 2020 was fine? So does my phone know that we're in a global pandemic? Besides the occasional text from the government or my phone provider reminding me to stay safe and socially distance, I'm not so sure. It knows that I've been spending more time on it, but it also knows that I've spent more time baking, reading, communicating with my friends. But does my phone know more about me? I guess I'll leave that to Siri to figure out. Hey Siri, what do you know about me?
I don't have an answer for that. Is there something else I can help with?
That story was produced by Veronica Leonard. The new Animal Crossing game came out just as we were locking down. At a time when so many of us were suddenly stuck inside, there was a new digital space people could go to decorate virtual hotel lobbies, go fishing, and sell turnips? I don't know, I've never played it, but people seem to really like it. When Janae saw her sister getting into it, she wanted to learn more.
So a couple of weeks ago, I set out with the idea to find quarantine utopias. I wanted to find out where people were going. Now you couldn't go anywhere. My first thought was the cyberspace. Stuck at home, I watched my sister communicate with her friends in these wild, violent, alternative realities. No! One day, I saw her playing Nintendo's Animal Crossing New Horizons. The game immediately looks different. Bubblegum pastels and talking animals bustle around singing and watering plants. I asked her, what's the point? Nothing. It's completely devoid from rules. Kind of like virtual Lego or a dollhouse. You build it and play in it. Something about this premise was so curious. So I set out online to talk to people like my sister, who were using the game as a means to communicate and play with their friends. But instead, I found something bigger. I went on the Animal Crossing Reddit, which if you don't know, it's basically a social media platform connecting communities, kind of like Facebook but for your hobbies. And I found the strangest thing. People were mourning this bubblegum video game. One girl, named Emily, 23, from North Virginia, posted a photo of her father's memorial in the game. The photo was an in-game screenshot of an idle cup of tea. And amongst the usual threads of text in the Reddit, Emily's post stood out. The tea, alongside a serving tray and sugar, rested on custom-made garden tiles with a backdrop of the starry night. To the left of it, cassette radio. Despite initially looking for those quarantine escapisms, I want to hear about Emily's desire to stay still, using Animal Crossing as a way of channeling her grief.
I first started playing in 2005, towards the end of it, so I can't even remember back then, but we had had a really rough year in my family, and mom saw the game. Actually, yeah, my whole family played for quite a bit. It was my mom, my dad, and my brother a little bit, and I. So, ever since I've been 9 years old, I'm 23 now, but ever since then, Animal Crossing has been in some way, shape, or form a part of my life. You know, I was a bit of a quiet kid at many points, and so it definitely felt like something that, not necessarily a control kind of thing, but something I could come home to. And I always found it very peaceful. And sometimes, even in my idle time, just in real life, I'm sometimes hearing the game music in my head when I need a peaceful moment. It really is, I guess it is, I wouldn't go as far to say that it's part of my identity, but I would definitely say that it's very important to me.
So tell me about the tea set up on your island as memorial for your dad.
I know it's technically a teacup, but I like to think there's coffee in it, actually. He would drink tea, but it was definitely a morning coffee kind of guy, and got some cream and sugar out there. He didn't take sugar, so I suppose the sugar is for me more than anything. But it's sitting on one of the topmost cliffs. It's nestled between some trees. There are actually there are two apple trees around it now. I'm in there. I'm up there at least once a day. I mean, I'm up there anyway since I go to the museum, so it's usually nice to just stop by. I've got a little bench next to it in case my mom and I want to sit there in game. It's actually, I moved my museum to be near it because when he was playing the game, my dad really liked the museum. And like Blathers, he was also a bit of a history buff. So I just felt like it was the right thing to do, honestly.
Part of Animal Crossing's charm is in the villagers that inhabit the island, talking animals with their own personalities. Blathers the Owl, that Emily mentions, is the curator of the Animal Crossing Museum. He's this wise owl excited to tell you about the fossils, fish, and bugs that you can donate to his museum. Emily tells me that it's these little mechanics and quirks of the game that make it more personal, and the items her dad liked in previous Animal Crossing games are able to be honored in his memorial.
Definitely the one that came in most randomly. I think in this version of the game, they call it a pro tape recorder, but in previous installations, it was called a reel-to-reel, and it's also the specific color variant that he used to use, the red and yellow-orange ones. So it's these two spinning together, doing a bit of a tape deck situation, and that sits up there playing KK Condor. He always used that in his house. And honestly, one of the first days I was playing, there was a balloon flying overhead and I got it. And it was that pro tape recorder, the reel to reel, in the same colors that he used to use. And I thought, wow, if that's not a sign, then I don't know what is. And sometimes it's a little shorter than that. I just kind of acknowledge it as I pass it by because I'm shaking trees in order to try and find the bees for the day. So sometimes my visits are definitely a bit more mundane, but then other times they're definitely more thought out. I tend to get a bit more emotional about it at nighttime. Don't know why. Sometimes the moon hits just right. I don't know. And yeah, I sometimes I just stand there listening to the song. My dad, he had advanced colon cancer, as well as some complications from that. And in July of 2019, he was put in hospice care, and he passed in October. So, and it was already not looking great from the beginning of 2019. He was never going to get to play the new game, you know what I mean? And so I was thinking, even before he passed, that it might be comforting to me. And between that and the whole world going a bit crazy right now, really hard to find your bearings. So something like Animal Crossing, probably more helpful than ever before, definitely for me personally.
It sounds like you sort of want to leave it undisturbed. Even before, when you said that you moved the museum to be closer to your dad, rather than moving your dad closer to the museum.
I've never really thought about moving it either, you know. One thing that is interesting, I do have a slope going up to it, just for ease of access, and, well, you know, the museum's there too. And it's actually kind of nice seeing my villagers going up there sometimes. Like, sometimes they're just doing things as innocuous as walking through the trees, and sometimes they sit on the bench and stay a spell, and I think that's really nice, because, I mean, okay, these are virtual animals in a computer game, and they have never met my father, but they're, by interacting with the memorial, even though it's really just scenery dressing to them, it almost feels like further validation that he was here and he was important, and that is a little weird to say out loud, but I've learned, if there's one thing I've learned with grief, it's that you can get a little weird and it's okay.
I was just wondering, Emily, why you decided to share your memorial with the people on Reddit.
I guess I wasn't really looking for critique or validation so much as solidarity, I suppose. Loss can be a bit unfamiliar to people who've not experienced it, and I do not blame them for it at all. But it can be a little isolating to be on the other side of that, that people maybe want to help you, want to listen, but don't know what to say. I figured, since I'd seen other people posting their memorial areas, maybe it would also give somebody else permission to sit with their grief a little while, even though it's uncomfortable and maybe even really raw. I guess in part, it's sharing that my dad was here, kind of remembering him on a wider scale, even sharing my memorial to him in front of extraordinarily kind strangers. It's still speaking him into the world, even if that world is the weird void of the internet, and recognizing that, yeah, he was a real person. He was here. I am remembering him, and I am remembering him quietly and loudly in my own ways.
That story was produced by Janae Madden. You're listening to All the Best. I'm Maddie McQueen. All the Best is about training emerging Australian storytellers in the art of audio. If you'd like to be a part of the show, you can start by pitching to us at allthebestradio.com. We'll pair you with one of our supervising producers to help make your story. Violet's mum is an artist, a lawyer, and the president of the New South Wales Fencing Association. In our final story, she takes us on a tour of her digital home.
I describe my digital home as a castle, because a castle is very integrated and it provides for everything that I need in my life. I've been working via the internet for over a decade, so the office in my online castle is very well established. It's a great hall with a big boardroom table in it where I meet my clients and stakeholders. That table is Zoom, Google Meet, Skype, also WhatsApp.
So I'm just calling about a couple of things.
My storage cabinets are a program called World Docs, kept very secure because there's a lot of confidential information there. I also have a ledger to keep time, a platform called Harvest. In the Great Hall, there's an annex. That annex houses tens of thousands of carrier pigeons. They send documents all over the world, and those are effectively emails. My castle features a courtyard, the arena for combat and sword play. I love watching fencing, so I have tournaments. I've been known to watch these tournaments through the night. The other big feature in my castle is an art studio. It's built predominantly by Instagram and my sketchbook, Procreate. It's where I workshop and exhibit my own artwork. It's also a fantastic art shop because I can easily access inspiration. The most prominent feature, which I go to every day, is my observation tower. My access to the news of the world. Taking pride of place is a really powerful telescope. It's got different lenses to different news outlets.
Sporadic outbreaks of COVID-19. Two schools now in lockdown over positive cases.
The telescope can train itself in 360 degrees. I'm very interested in different perspectives. Sometimes it rains in the observation tower.
It has been a painful night of violence and protest in Minneapolis.
It really blows a storm and it's hard to stand firm and hold on.
After the protesters took to the streets to demand justice for George Floyd, the unarmed, handcuffed black man who pleaded to the police officer to let him free as the officer.
I've become very adept at quickly moving between different rooms and different activities. I think my internet home reveals that I'm a multifaceted person. I would probably describe myself as a Renaissance woman in an internet castle.
That story was produced by Violet Hull. All the Best would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we make these stories and pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. This episode was produced by radio and podcasting students at the University of Sydney. Special thanks to Lee Redfern, Tegan Nichols, Sarah Mashman, and Zoe Ferguson. All the Best is made at FBI Radio in Sydney in association with SYN and 3RRR in Melbourne. Our executive producer is Ryan Pemberton. Mel Chun is our Victorian State Coordinator. This episode was mixed and compiled by Gemma Lipman. The All the Best community coordinators are Chloe Gillespie and Danny Stewart. Our SYN community coordinator is Lee Robinson. Matilda Fay and Angela Moran are our social media producers, and I'm your host, Maddie McQueen. Shining Bird composed our theme music and Annie Hamilton designed the artwork. We're heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network and we're made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can find out more at cbf.org.au. You can find more episodes by searching For All the Best wherever you get your podcasts.